Hi, this is Michael Felgate. If you missed Racing Pulse, stay tuned now because here are some of the highlights.
Welcome back to Racing Pulse live from Cranbourne. It's a dreary old morning. The rain is falling here. I wonder how much has been falling at Caulfield. We've got a couple of days before the big blue diamond. After 9 o'clock, we'll be catching up with Trent Busserton and Natalie Young, who have two of the leading contenders, Let's Be Glam and Tagaloa. But the horse they have to beat is the favourite, Hanseatic. Although yesterday there was a sigh of anguish from most punters when the number one marble came up for Hanseatic. The man who is looking for two diamonds in a row is Luke Curry, and he will have to navigate a clear path for the favourite after the barrier draw. And it's great to have a chat to him on Racing Pulse this morning. Good morning, Luke. How are you, mate?
Good, Michael. Yourself?
Very well indeed. Now, be honest. Initial reaction when you saw gate one for Hanseatic?
Yeah, I didn't say much for a minute. I just sort of let it sink in. I can't say I was too pleased.
How do you think the race will pan out? No doubt you've probably looked at the permutations, the horses drawn around you, and you know him better than anyone from riding him in all his starts. How do you think it will play out for him on Saturday?
Well, I think off the, generally there's tempo in a blue diamond, and off those fillies races, the colts races have both been run quite steadily, but the fillies have gone a bit quicker, so I'd imagine there's going to be a bit of speed round. The horse drawn initially outside, the horse of Mars, it's won a couple, probably hold a spot there somewhere. So if we're around it, a beautiful night, we're around it, it has led. It's probably going to look to be box seat, so we might end up behind it. We might be inside it. But I'd imagine from the one, if he jumps clean enough, he doesn't have to get back as far as what he probably has his previous couple of starts.
Well, he drew two last start, yet you ended up going back and rounding the field up on the outside. Was that just something that occurred on the day, or is he a horse that doesn't mind racing inside other horses?
No, he's fine. Had he have stepped well, I
You there, Luke? Well, we might have just lost Luke Curry there. We might try and get him back in a second, because we need to find out what his plan is with the $2.50 favourite in the Blue Diamond. He was around about $2.30 before the barrier draw. There was some talk that he could have started as short as even money, but after drawing barrier one, it'll be interesting when we speak to the tab a little later if they think that there will be a drift for Hanseatic on Saturday, or will the punters come for what has undoubtedly been the most dominant colt of the two-year-old season so far? We've got Luke Curry back on the line. Luke, we just lost you there as you were explaining the reason why he ended up in the position he was last start and whether he likes racing inside horses or not.
Yeah, I think he's fine inside horses. I've trialled him inside horses. And had he have stepped really well, he probably would have ended up sort of third defence there that day, but he ended up 1-1, and then when Rulership crossed and the horse of Hayes crossed again, he was three back, and the horse in front of him was going nowhere, coming to the corner and just dragging back out of the race. So he was travelling quite well at the time. So I would have thought that had he not been dragged out, he would have been racing right into the box seat. So I wouldn't be surprised if he just landed in that spot on Saturday if he jumped well.
Have you done any work with him between runs?
No, I haven't. I seen him at the track the other morning, and they lead me off to a race day. They don't want me to bugger it up before race day.
Interesting comment from Ed Producer Fabric. We spoke to just a little earlier on the show this morning, and he said he's got a question mark on the favourite because he can get a bit hot and stirred up, and barrier one, he's going to be in the gates for a longer time than what he's previously experienced. Is that much of a concern for you?
It's always a concern. I suppose it's a concern in any two-year-old race. They can go to the races one day and be quiet as lambs, and then the next week get hot and lose it. But he's been pretty much the same every start, so he's still produced when the gates have opened. So I'd be more concerned if he'd been quiet and then got to the races on Saturday and got stirred up. So I'd expect him to get a bit hot on Saturday, but he seemed to have he still handled it when his last few starts when he has. So, but like I say, it is always a concern.
Intriguing race. Obviously, you've got Rulership, who you ran down in the prelude. We get to see a way game, a new player on the scene, and the fillies as well. Who do you think is the hardest to beat?
Well, I suppose off the form, Rulership from the other day. He's drawn well. He's drawn to have a nice run. I hear that they're going to ride him just off them a little bit. A way game, she can't have been any more impressive than what she's done her last few starts. Busted that won the other day was quite good. So, yeah, they're probably the main ones. But two-year-old racing can almost throw up something else. And I won on a way game in Queensland 40-1. So, yeah, I won't take anything too lightly.
How do you compare the two?
She was really good. She was brilliant there. But I thought he's just got the class edge over her. He's a bit stronger, and you never know with them. I think she'll be quite hard to beat.
Final word: if you get even luck, do you expect him to win?
Yes.
Good luck, mate. You'll have a lot of punters on your side on Saturday. Luke Curry, champion jockey, looking for two diamonds in a row. It is the feature on Saturday, but we've got good Group 1 racing, including the Futurity. And Lindsay Smith might have been happy this morning to hear that Alabama Express is going to bypass the Futurity. I had a chat to Mike Moroney off air, and he said the reason is he thinks the 3 weeks into the Guineas will suit him better. Australian Guineas is going to be a cracking race. And if he can win the Guineas, he said he hasn't ruled out a start in the All-Star Mile if he gets a ticket into the race. Lindsay Smith joins us. He's got the old boy Blackheart Bart back on Saturday. How are you, Lindsay?
Yeah, good, Michael.
How's the old boy going, Blackheart Bart? Gee, looked good in a trial over in WA.
Yeah, they weren't bad horses in the trial, but he showed a lot of dash for the old fella. So the jockey, Paul Harvey, was happy with him and said he's quite keen going to the gate. So he hasn't lost his enthusiasm, so and he worked at Camperdown on Tuesday, yesterday morning, and Brad went down and rode him, and he said he was going to be competitive, so that was a tick. So he didn't say he'd run last, so that's why he's going to the races.
Well, I suppose you want to put a big showing on the table to try and get in the All-Star Mile. It's a win and you're in, but there's also wild cards up for grabs. What's your expectation? How do you think he'll go?
Some of them young horses are quite good. Realistic, if you run in the first five, it would be good effort. And then, I don't know where he'll go after that. If he gets in the All-Star Mile, so be it. I've done my best to, I suppose, if he doesn't get, well, I can't do any more voting, so I can't sort of say, I'll give you half stake. But it is what it is. It's a type of race, and he doesn't get in it, he'll have to go elsewhere, but it's not the end of the world.
Gee, you've got a nice three-year-old colt here in a stellar year for the three-year-olds. Adelaide Ace goes around in the Autumn Stakes. The step up to 1,800 looks like it will suit. Gee, it was a good run in the Autumn Stakes. How's he going?
Yeah, no, he's really going good. He wants the 1,800. He's in the Australian Guineas, but unless he won quite easy, I don't think he's going that way. He'll keep going out and trip. So he's done well. I expect him to be hard to beat.
If he won, would you have a throw at the stumps at an Australian Cup as a 3-year-old?
I do strange things, so I don't know what I'm thinking. So it could be possible, but I don't think so. I'd say he might go to Adelaide, or he might even go home to Perth for the Derby at home.
All right. Does Anjana get a run in the Oakley Plate?
Yeah, the owners, some of the owners are keen to go, some aren't, so they're going to have a little meeting today. But they say she handles the wet track. I don't know a lot about it, but I know her first up form seems to be good. So she's got to get a run yet. So do you know any information? She got the run yet or not?
We haven't got the final field yet. We'll bring that through as soon as we get it. So we're still waiting on the Group 1 final field. So
otherwise, she'll go to Flemington the week later.
Okay. Quick one. You got a few runners in Perth today at Ascot. Have we got a winner?
Yeah, I can't help you much. It's $1.70, but I can only tip you. So it's $1.70 chance, yes. Tycoon Storm.
All right. We'll take the money in race number three. Lindsay, I was intrigued to see last night you were on after the last on racing.com, and you you came up with a solution that might help the late nights and the fatigue for a number of trainers in floating horses. You said maybe we should be able to stable horses overnight closer to these night meetings. Is that something that you've had any much traction or spoken with any of the administrators about?
No, I spoke to Peter Downs once about it because now he's at Moonee Valley and he started telling me all the changes, and we discussed because he's come from Warrnambool and he understands the situation. As I said last night, I choose to live here, but with all the changes going on with Caulfield and Moonee Valley, yeah, they just had a little barn for visiting horses, and even, you know, you can stay overnight, and there's always them hotels around the area. It would make it a lot safer. I know it's an expense, but that's up. You know, we have to wear that, but that's safety first. And as I said last night, coming home after the Australia Day Stakes, we didn't get home at 2 o'clock, and then had the phone up 2 hours later. And after you won, it's not easy to, go to sleep straight away. But especially with knowing you have to get up. But anyway, I don't know. It's I'm just out there trying to put it out there. So something like that would work.
Oh, I think it's a good idea. Would you like to see the races end earlier of a night?
No. Whatever the public want, I'd say, this is my job. I'm happy to deal what they do, as long as, you know, we can have a situation where we can go to bed and have the day off, and whatever the partners want, I'm happy to appease them.
Lindsay, always great to chat. What's your one best for the week? Is there a horse that we should be following, or we just take the $1.70 today?
No, just take the $1.70 and go and have a drink.
Good on you, Lindsay. Good luck over the weekend. Lindsay Smith, champion trainer.
Your stories from racing's heartland. This is RSN 927's Racing Pulse.
Welcome back to Racing Pulse on the Road. We are live from Cranbourne. We've just entered the trainer's hut at Trent Bussett and Natalie Young's place, where it's a little bit warmer than outside because the rain is coming down quite steadily here at Cranbourne. Looking forward to spending the next 40 minutes or so with Trent Bussett and Natalie. Trent, how are you, mate?
Good, thanks, mate. How are you?
Very well indeed. You happy and used to Cranbourne life? It's a bit dreary out there. You got used to being a Cranbourneite?
Yeah, it's beautiful sunny weather here as usual, but no, it's obviously used to it coming from New Zealand, but the winters are the same, but certainly a bit different today.
If you said 3 years ago when yourself and Natalie were moving over from New Zealand, you'd look behind and down where we are up in the office of the box of horses that you have right now, would you have believed it?
No, certainly we were hoping to do the best we could, but, you know, no doubt things have gone rather smoothly, but we've been extremely lucky. We've got great owners behind us and great staff, and sort of everything's fallen into place, but you certainly got to have the cattle behind you. There's plenty of good trainers out there without, and so, like I say, we're just lucky we've got good owners supporting us.
We were lucky enough to have your better half, Natalie, on a Saturday morning a couple of weeks ago, and she basically said that it's all her doing, it's all her credit. How are you, Natalie?
I don't think so. I'm good, thanks, Michael.
Just talking to Trent about, would you have believed you would have been here 3 years ago when you got on the plane to come over from New Zealand with the quality of animal and the number of horses you have here?
Yeah, it's been hard grafting, but it's always been the plan of motion from the get-go. So, I think we've always wanted to be, sort of try to climb the tree and get to the top. So it's small steps, but I think we're slowly getting there.
How do you split it up between yourself working as a team? A husband and wife team working 24/7 with the pressures of racing?
Oh, it certainly has its moments, but no, we work very well together. You have to, both very passionate about it, and obviously, like you can see with a lot of trainers going into partnerships today, there's so many different aspects of it, and you spread around the place all the time racing and that. So we've certainly got our systems in place, but it works well. But you're certainly spending a fair amount of time apart.
Trent's good at the long lunches, obviously. He's good at bringing the clients in, and I let him long lunch as much as he likes, actually, as long as he's coming back saying he's sold a few horses.
Do you split certain duties up amongst the training regime?
Certainly. Natalie's in control of the staff and the day-to-day runnings and sort of the horses training, but we're as far as the programming and doing, it's very much a collective process, and we sit there and decide the best path for the horses, and certainly have your differences and disagreements, but that's all part of it. And as long as it's coming up with the best way forward, and they're going well on the track, that's what counts.
How big is the day-to-day running of an operation? To give the listeners some perspective, we've got a huge whiteboard in the office here with over 100 horses' names on it. The news coming out that you've just acquired the boxes here next door as well to increase your number here at Cranbourne. So how do you keep across everything, Nat?
You've got to be organised, basically. You've got to know where they are. You've got movements happening all the time. It's just putting staff in those positions that can do a bit of organising down on the floor too. And look, we've got Brendan Horton over here, one of our best mates for years. So he's going to be sort of running that next barn and, you know, overseeing that and looking at those horses, and he'll have a few there of his own too. So just getting the right people behind you that you can fully trust and trust in their judgement as well.
How big are you now, Trent?
We're still a boutique stable. That magic word that every trainer likes, the boutique and the time and quality and the rest of it. No, look, it's probably a bit misleading saying we're expanding. We've had a set of stables off course that have had, you know, 35 boxes that, like Natalie says, Brendan recently has come over and he's doing the pre-trainers, and we've sort of always had that number, but... we've sort of outsourced the pre-training, and the people that have been doing that have done a fantastic job for us. But sort of the opportunity came up to get these stables next door, and it was too good to pass up, and sort of we're sort of centralising it and trying to sort of get it all in one system. So we're not taking on a huge, you know, amount of new horses. We'll take any horse that comes in the door, but the numbers haven't increased significantly. It's just basically the demographic of the stables has changed.
Are you planners for the future? Do you have a vision in mind of how big you want to be, and do you want to have you know, different stables in different states?
Oh, for the moment, we're certainly happy with where we are, and I think this number's ideal for us. So you never discount the possibility. Obviously, you know, the New South Wales racing scene is fantastic, and there are stables up there, obviously, with bases in both places, but you certainly don't want to spread yourself thin either. And we've only been here 3 years. We're still, you know, still learning and getting around things. And we just want to sort of do the best we can and win good races and as many races as we can down here in Victoria.
There's been a lot of talk recently about animal welfare, and the topic of the last 24 hours has been this tongue tie situation. You're both experienced horse people. Trent, to you first. What do you make about that singular rule change, but the overall, thought process from administrators and those people out there to make these little tweaks to perceived outside pressure?
Look, the administrators have got a hard task in the landscape at the moment, but the disappointing thing from the trainers, I would say, especially about this tongue tie debate, is there was absolutely no consultation. The first I saw of it was when I read it on RaceNet or something. And look, we've been around horses for our whole lives, and my father, and we've been putting stockings on as tongue ties for as long as we can remember. It certainly doesn't affect them in any way. You know, the other people use rubber bands or elastic, and there's no harm, no difference, but there's probably no consultation, which was disappointing. But they've got to be very careful, the authorities. They're just bending over backwards, just going out their way to, you know, the tree huggers and animal welfare activists, and we're all horse lovers and animal lovers and do the best by the horse. But the people that are having the argument with, they don't want racing. You know, it's not gonna, they don't care whether the whips hit five or six times or whether the tongue tie's on. They're not happy with it. They don't want it there, so they're doing their best to try and work with them, but they've got to draw a line in the sand and say, you know, enough's enough, and stand up for the racing industry. Like, you look at the Hong Kong racing industry, it's just absolutely thriving. They don't have whip rules, and I'm not saying I'm against the whip rules, but they just keep on bending over to these people. And you look at the half-wits that were out there, you know, protesting at the Flemington races and that, they flat having a brain between all of them put together when you go and have a look at them, and these are the people that they're listening to. So that they've got to stand up for the racing industry and the participants and listen to the people that, you know, opinion counts.
But none of those people would have set foot in a racing stable, so they would have no idea how we care for our horses at all, and that's what kind of annoys us and all the participants that actually love the horse. You know, I invite them in to see what we do every morning and see how much money we spend on them every morning and see how well they're actually cared for, you know, but not one of them would have ever set foot in one. So, and as for the whip rule, like they want to ban it, well, it's for the safety of the jockey. You know, like the whips there, I always have my riders carry a whip on the colts just for their safety, basically. So if they do anything wrong, they've got it there to keep them in line. It's not to bash the horse up by any means. Mm. But when did the horse become more important than the jockey or the human on top of the horse? That's the question. I mean, the stick's there, and you ask any jockey, they don't want to ride without one, because just in case something happens, what if a horse runs off the track or something like that, or runs into a crowd, they've got the stick there as a tool to help correct it and keep it straight. It's purely for the safety there of the jockey.
You mentioned the welfare of participants, jockeys, trainers, stable hands. That's the other big talking point at the moment. We had a bit of a forum in the studio yesterday about what is available to those who work in the racing industry. And I know the lateness of night racing has been a big talking point. And I just spoke to Lindsay Smith, who threw up an interesting idea about maybe having an on-course stabling area that if you're an outside metro trainer, you can leave your horses there the day before and have some place to stay so that you're not driving back late at night. What do you guys think about the night racing, the times that it finishes, the burden on participants? Is it dangerous? Does it need to change?
We probably don't need as many. I think it is sometimes. You don't want tired staff the next day. Like you don't have the numbers of staff to have half on one day and then half the next. It's just not possible. And I think if you've got a tired staff member that's coming into work, well, that's when, you know, accidents happen. They haven't quite got their game face on, and that, you know, accidents happen. The animals, they, you know, they kick, they bite, they do things like wrong sometimes, and it's really for the safety of the staff member. So I think if they're fatigued, you can run into problems.
You have a lot of staff and a lot of night runners. How do you juggle them?
Oh, it's something you've got to manage. But look, we probably look at it a bit different. Also, we've come from New Zealand with terrible stake money, where it is what it is. Every industry has their negative points in that, but look, if they're running for $50,000 at Moonee Valley every Friday night, you know, we'll be there. The factory workers or the truck drivers or whoever in every industry, they get tired as well. So at some point, we've got to suck it up. The industry's driven by turnover. If people are betting on those night meetings, well, they're going to have them, and, you know, like, you've obviously got to manage your staff and that, and but everyone gets tired. But if there are races to be won, and you'll manage it and find your way around it. And some of those jockeys, I understand Mark Zara probably pointed it out, that some of the jockeys don't have the luxury of saying no to going to those meetings, but at the same time, they're well paid, and, you know, there's plenty of jockeys, mate, you know, they've got a good lifestyle, so I don't feel real sorry for any of them either, to be honest. Like, it's hard to feel sorry for Ollie and Willow and Duane Dunn getting tired when you look at the cars they're driving, where they're living in their beach houses. So I'm sure they'll be right.
Well, what about you guys? We hear about the trainers, the burnout. How do you guys get away and have a break when you've got 100-odd horses on your books?
We normally sort of get 1 week a year, really, where we use it as a bit of a family holiday. But look, we try and coincide sometimes the sales. When we go up to Magic Millions, we take the kids up with us. So we just try and work it in with our family, basically. And then if Trent gets a bit tired, then he just gives me a nudge and I get out of bed and he has to sleep it, and vice versa.
That's the other thing. Having kids and running a family is tough for anyone, let alone the hours you guys have to work. How do you try and juggle it, Trent?
Oh, again, you just make it work. Again, I don't think any industry, you know yourself, the hours you work, you just, if you want to be successful, if you want to make money, if you want to do well, you got to put in the hours, and no one's working a 40-hour week these days, so you just simply make it work. But like I say, the racing's something you got to be passionate about, but it certainly has more upside than downside, and it's, you know, very lucrative with the stake money and that, so if you want to do well, you've just got to put in the hours. But we have a good balance with our kids there at the stables more often than not. But
do you want them to be trainers?
Hopefully not. Hopefully they're too smart. But
well, they're more excited about the vending machine downstairs than the horses at the moment. they're starting to take a bit of interest, so that's good.
What's Trent's main duty when it comes to the kids?
He just feeds them up Coca-Cola and then hands them over to me.
Winds them up. When we had Natalie on, you wouldn't have heard it because you were interstate. She told us about how you met and said it was love at first sight.
Yeah, it was probably about 30 kilos ago for me, but yeah, I was lucky and she was unlucky. She's been stuck with me, so
here we go. She did say you had a six-pack at the time. Now you're carrying them.
Yeah, that's it. One each hand, the Corona.
We're live from Trent Bussett and Natalie Young stables here at Cranbourne, a special edition of Racing Pulse on the Road. We're going to take a break and then we're going to move from the office and we're going to walk down amongst the horses because there are so many stars that I want to talk to both of you about, including the two big guns who are heading to the Diamond on Saturday.
The heartbeat of Victorian racing, RSN 927's Racing Pulse.
Welcome back to Racing Pulse on the Road. We are live in Cranbourne from the stables of Trent Bussett and Natalie Young, and we're standing outside the box of Tagaloa, who is one of their big chances. Of course, they've got Let's Be Glam in the Diamond as well. And Natalie, the barrier god smiled on you yesterday. You would have been very happy with the barriers for both your chances in the Diamond.
Yeah, absolutely ecstatic, to be honest. It's a really nice draw. Tagaloa's got four, Trent drew, and then I drew Let's Be Glam three. So, look, they're right beside each other. Draws, they really help you on those big races. So if you're drawing wide, it forces you to ride your horse a little bit different. So I think they'll be posse up quite nice from that inside gate.
I know this is a horse that both you and Natalie have got a huge opinion of, Tagaloa. Give us a bit of insight into what type of horse he is. He's standing here. He's inquisitive, having a look at us. He's a beautiful looking animal, isn't he, Trent?
He is. He's well natured for a colt. He's lovely, quiet, and good temperament. Obviously, what you need to be kept a colt. So he's probably not your typical 2 year old looking at him. He is a good looking horse, but he's not a big, strong, robust horse. So sort of same, you know, whatever he's doing now, he's going to be a lot better at three and a lot better suited at three. But he's certainly got the class and the ability to run a race on Saturday.
You've won derbies. Is he, though, a horse potentially that could be your best horse or your stable headline?
I won't say that because as soon as a trainer mentions that word best horse, you just
put the knocker on.
Kill them off. I declared one, I think, to you last Saturday.
We'll get to acting later.
But look, yeah, potentially I think he's right up there on ability. He's actually on breeding. You know, the dam won
1800 metres,
and the stallion seems to be throwing them all different types, so we sort of haven't figured him out yet, but I'd say as a three-year-old over a mile, he's going to be right up there.
He was good behind Hanseatic. He kept coming on the line. Do you think the 1200 will suit him better?
Yeah, and more so probably we knew he'd go in there a bit underdone, but he went in there a bit softer than we thought. Was 10 weeks between runs, and he's a good doing colt. And the three horses that finished in front of him had sort of had a run under their belt. So we're hoping and thinking that we won't say he will beat the favourite, but I think he can bridge a margin from what they beat him in first up. He's definitely tightened up and he'll go in there a lot sharper second up.
If he runs well in the Diamond, is Sydney on the agenda?
Yeah, definitely. If he pulls up well, we'll just let him tell us. But if he happened to deliver on Saturday, well, he's done his job as a two-year-old. So we'll just reassess on Sunday, Monday.
If he wins a Diamond, he's a colt. What would he be worth?
Enough, anyway.
Enough. It'd be a good payday.
Look, yeah, certainly, obviously, by Lord Cannonola, he'd certainly have some exposure as a colt, obviously. So if he can do the job, yeah, that'd be very exciting. And if he runs well, you know, the potential is there to head up to Sydney, a race like the Size Produce or even the Slipper. And I see it's come up a soft seven at the moment with a bit more rain forecast. We certainly wouldn't be averse to seeing him on a wet track. He's trialled up extremely well on wet conditions here at Cranbourne. So we are quite happy to see the cut out of the track.
Well, he's a colt who could become worth a hell of a lot as we go for a bit of a walk through the stable complex. But you've got the filly Let's Be Glam, who probably surprised most punters, and we had you on that day, Nat. And, I mean, you didn't say she didn't have a chance, but I don't think you were expecting to see her win by two lengths hard held.
Well, just the barrier. And I knew she'd end up being three deep, and she was three deep without cover. But I think just Preble, just keeping her go forward instead of trying to pull back and get cover may have won on the race, you know. Just kept her momentum up, and, yeah, she was super. And she was a faster time than the boys too by that half a second.
Has she continued to improve, Trent?
She has. She certainly snuck up on us a bit. She hasn't done anything wrong. She's won a couple of jump outs nicely, but probably really never had a lot of pressure applied. And she won well. She won well first up, albeit in a pretty limited grade. And then she's obviously improved going into that second run and put them away. So her work on Tuesday was very sharp, and we're hoping she can improve again, but she's certainly on the way up.
They're a colt and a filly. Do you ever put them together and work them, Tagaloa and Let's Be Glam?
They galloped together before that last race. They galloped together on the Tuesday, and Let's Be Glam kept up with Tagaloa, so we thought, she's worth a crack at the group too.
Here she is here. She's a beautiful-looking filly, isn't she? She's got her ears pricked to come out and say hello. What's her, I suppose, attitude like?
She's got a great attitude, actually, but she can sort of kick her heels up walking around the stable. She'll come off the walker and bounce around. When she's in her box and to handle, she's very lovely. But she does get on her toes, and she's definitely, in the last couple of days, been wearing her high heels around. She nearly kicked my head off yesterday morning as I
really?
Walked past. Yeah, she was on her A game. So, yeah, she's very well. I think she's improved since that last race, just coat-wise too. She's just starting to get a real nice bit of shine about her.
Well, she was right up on the speed last start. From that good gate, where do you think she'll be?
Yeah, she'll definitely plant up there. We'll obviously leave it to Brett. He's a world-class jockey. And knows her, so she could possibly end up in front, but if the speed comes from outside her, he'll obviously take a sit, but she's certainly going to be up there in the firing line somewhere.
Who do you think's your best hope? You first, Trent?
I'd lean towards the colt still, but I have been wrong once or twice. So what I say doesn't really matter. I'm right up there with the worst punters, so look, if either of them puts their hands up, great, but as long as they run well, it's the connections. Cambridge started New Zealand. It's a big effort and a big deal for them to have a runner in the race. The Lindsays have taken over Cambridge Stud in the last couple of years, and they're out there racing a lot of starting to race a lot of fillies in Australia, so it would be a big deal for the Stud and ourselves if we could get a result for them.
It would be a big result for you guys as well, to have those colours carried to victory. They got some nice horses at the moment. I think we'll see probably from them as well, racing in Sydney on the weekend. All right, Nat, I'll put you under pressure. Of the two.
On time-wise, I'm swinging towards the filly, even though I've got a big soft spot for Tagaloa. I'm just worried about fitness with Tagaloa. I think he still had a little bit of a blow on Tuesday, but I don't think there'll be much in them. They've worked together and they've kept up their noses together, so there won't be much in it. We see whoever jumps better and gets a better run in transit, I think.
And what would it mean for you guys to win a diamond? Because you've probably been stamped as trainers of middle distance and stayers because your success in the derbies when you came over.
Yeah, there's no question that, and rightly so. Our success has been over those staying trips, but we've sort of made a concerted effort to go out and get some nice two-year-old types around us, and the two-year-olds are running well at the moment. But even aside from that, it's one of the flagship races of the Victorian calendar, and it's also a stallion-making race. So it would be our biggest win to date, I'm sure.
We walk a couple of boxes down, and we get to see Mirage Dancer, who, if you missed it, was in the paper the other day doing a little bit of ballet. How did you train that into him?
Not my forte, so.
We thought it was better having Mirage and ballets and tutus and Trent, to be honest. He handled it wonderfully, actually. The two girls there beside him, and he stood there like a lamb. For a six-year-old stallion, it's absolutely unbelievable. He's got an unbelievable temperament, though, this horse. You wouldn't even think he's a stallion.
Well, we saw his ability in the spring with that huge run in the Caulfield Cup. What happened first up?
It was certainly disappointing. It was a nothing run, basically. Like, he's been working very sharp. His coat, while he went great in the spring in Caulfield, his coat was a bit in between, whereas at the moment it's dappled up and he couldn't look any better. And we never went in there thinking he's going to win, obviously, but I thought he'd be hitting the line strong. And he sort of just got back and didn't do anything at all, so we couldn't put a finger on anything. He's come through the race great, up to 1,800. I'd be very surprised and very disappointed if he's not bouncing back and showing us something.
Well, on his run in the Caulfield Cup, finishing third behind Murder Glass and Baron Declare, the Peter Young on Saturday over 1,800, if he produces that, he should be winning, shouldn't he?
I think so. You don't like to say that, but in reality, on his Europe form and that Caulfield Cup race, you're probably right. And at the start of this campaign, we thought, you know, that he's going to be, the Australian Cup's going to be ideal for him. And it's obviously thrown a question mark, a cloud over it, that first up run. But like I say, we can't fault him. And if he produces his best form, he'll be right there.
Is he shown on the training track, Nat, that he's back to his best?
Yeah, his work on Tuesday was super. And, you know, it was a really hot tempo, that race the other day. And he just jumped a little bit slow too. So he was always under a little bit of pressure a long way out. I think we're going to see the real mirage on Saturday. His work on Tuesday was super. So it'll be more of his distance. He'll jump better. They won't go so hard early. Yeah, I think he'll be worth an each way bet to get your money back from the first one.
And just having a look at him here, just to give the listeners some insight and also some of your training techniques, is a little bit of poultice on his legs. Is that purely precautionary and something that you do after they work?
Yeah, we do it to all the horses, actually. It just takes any heat out of them. We have two girls that go around and check all the legs of every horse. They've got any queries, they come to Trent or I, and we just wrap them up, and it's just a bit of prevention rather than cure, basically. But it just takes a little bit of sting out of their legs after they've worked. And it's just something that, you know, that you do for their athletes. So you've got to look after their legs. That's what they run on.
And a little earlier, I hope I'm not letting out any stable secrets, but I did see a lady walking around with some Manuka honey. She was giving it to Tagaloa and a few of the other horses. What's the is that an old Kiwi remedy, is it, Trent?
Well, it was just for me toast, but they got that. No, yeah, just again something that helps with their throat and with breathing. So, yeah, good old New Zealand honey. So it's just something that you try and find those one percenters and try and squeeze something out of them.
Walking past the box here of Larimer Street is another of your very good 2-year-olds who, went close in the 2 million English millennium. It might have been a case of what could have been.
Yeah, it was a pretty. The more times I watched it on replays, the worse it got. So it wasn't any fault of the jockeys. The brakes just didn't come. But you don't want to be unlucky in a $2 million race, and that's exactly what he was. So it's certainly disappointing. But there's plenty of opportunities, so we'll forget about that and go forward.
Where's he go now?
Probably either the Todman Stakes in Sydney or the Size Produce here in Flemington on the 7th. And best case scenario, the Golden Slipper, but you know, maybe a race like the Size Produce up in Sydney would be a race that'd suit him. Again, he's a colt. He's well bred by the Popes, who are prolific breeders in Victoria. Used to stand Rubiton, and if they could find another colt, it'd be great. And I think he's definitely got a big race in him. So hopefully we can get a bit of luck in another of the big ones.
We've got Rising Red poking his head out here. He'd be a bit of a stable favourite who had all the ability in the world, but unfortunately he just hasn't been able to really show it because of injury.
Yeah, he's right from the get-go. Well, he ran an unlucky second in the New Zealand Derby, and from then on he's been plagued with injuries. He's managed to win a couple of races since, but he's had very limited racing. He's sound at the moment, he's happy, and you're right, he is a stable favourite. If all horses had a heart as big as him, we'd be happy, but he's sound and happy at the moment, and hopefully we can get one across the board with him soon.
Will we see him on Saturday at Caulfield?
At this stage, he's entered. We might save him for the Wangaratta Cup the following Saturday, but we'll just see what the track comes up like, just with his legs and that. We don't want to see him running on firm going, so we'll play it by ear and he'll be in there. He may be scratched Saturday morning, depending how the track comes up, but wherever he goes next, he'll run well.
All right, now we come to the little girl who owes me some money, Acting. to be fair, she didn't have any luck last start.
No, as soon as I got on and opened my big mouth, I killed it, as you do. But Yeah, look, she, like you said, she's three deep without cover, and it took its toll. Like, it's, you can't do that in group racing, and I thought at the 200 she's still going to range up, but it, you know, she felt the pinch late, and she's done very well in between campaigns, and we only gave her the one trial going into the race, so that with the tough run just took the sting out of her the last bit, but she'll improve with it. The shades go on Saturday just to try and sort of her last two runs she's been a bit shaky or wayward in the straight, so hopefully that just sort of makes her concentrate a little bit more, but I got no doubt she can bounce back on Saturday over 1400.
Has she been on the training track, Matt?
Yeah, really good. We're probably just going to just put her through the gates tomorrow and just with the blinkers on and make sure she doesn't jump too slow as they can sometimes. But look, she's tightened up really nicely. And just being 1400, I think there's going to improvement there because they won't go quite so hard early. So she may be able to get to the front a little bit easier. I think she's better suited when she leads. But just she's been in amongst them that last couple of starts and she's just had a little bit of a look around. So the shades will really improve her on Saturday.
All right. Does Benny Mellon ride again?
Yes, he does. So he's getting to know her a bit. He's obviously a top class jockey, so it's good to have, you know, same jockey on a couple of starts.
Just looking at the names, you've got so many nice horses here, and you've probably got a lot of young ones that come through as well. How much do you spend on the yearling sales? Because we're in the buying time now. The sales are all around us. Do you have budgets that you set yourself?
You obviously like to go the sales with the buyers to buy the horses, you know, with orders, but that's not, you know, always the case. More often than not, it's not. You go and spec a lot of horses and syndicate them, and it's not far from ideal, obviously, getting heavily in debt, but it's just something that's got to be done. If you want the horses in the door, you've got to buy them. So we don't have any set amount. We sort of go the sales and try and buy half a dozen at each sales that comes up, and as long as we're moving them quick enough, we'll go the next sale and do it all over again. And like all trainers, you spend 12 months selling them off and get rid of them, and then you start doing it again and start all over the next set. So just the way it is. But
is it difficult to get your head around, though, when you look and you go, you know, we owe $2 million here. We've got to try and sell these off.
Well, I said to someone the other day, it's sort of you go into the sales complex and go in and sign up, and they ask you how much you want to spend, and, you know, you say $1 million or $2 million, like, and you've got $4 in your bank account, so it's you can't go to any house auction or buy a car or anything like that without proving you've got a bit of cash or a bit of ability to pay it back. But so it's certainly it's a unique circumstances, and yeah, it's one where you're always in debt, but it's you know, it's just the way the industry works. Everyone knows it's a unique industry, and the sales companies are always very good, and you know, they figure out who pays and who doesn't pay, and if you don't pay, you don't buy next year, so you got to.
That's the other side of being a trainer. Not only do you need to be good with horses and have that almost innate affinity and ability, but you've got to be able to run a business these days. How do you guys do that, Nat? Who looks after the dollars and cents?
We've got good people doing that. We've got Dan Moylan, who's our accountant, and does a lot of work behind the scenes for us. We've got a couple of really good, Melinda Seabold, she's our secretary upstairs that runs a tight ship. So you just got to surround yourself people with really good people that can do their job. I mean, I'm up there overseeing a few things a lot of the days, but I'm not that good with numbers. I think we both failed Math School C, actually. So it's just, just stick to what you're good at and what you know, basically. So I'm sort of better down here on the floor with the horses.
Tell us about this boy, Savvy Lad, who had his first Aussie start at Caulfield a couple of weeks ago, and he probably was disappointing on face value as well. Was there any excuse?
Yeah, he was shocking, but it was too bad to be true. He looked very impressive in New Zealand, trialled up very impressive, and never got in the race. He was never got on the bridle and was off the bit at the half mile, and subsequent scopes revealed that he had mucus down his throat, which is a... it just knocks the stuffing out of them, and they can't race with any energy. So, like, it wasn't as if he ran a battling third or fourth. He got beat 200 metres, so he's been on a course of antibiotics, cleaned that up, and he'll be back to the races midweek next week and hopefully bounce back, and then we can get his campaign back on track because he is a very talented horse.
All right, down the end there, we've got the Holy One heading to Sydney for the Hobartville on the weekend. Is that the case?
Yes, we sort of we've had a Sydney Derby campaign in mind with him the whole time, and just thought he's maybe en route, go through the Randwick Guineas. So no doubt it'll be a great race at Randwick Guineas, but obviously the Australian Guineas probably looks as good as it's ever been. Mm. So we've dodged the real hot colts, and more so I think he'll swim through a wet track, and it looks to be a wet Sydney Autumn to start with anyway, so he'll go round at the Hobartville on Saturday. It'll be too short for him second up, but as long as he's heading the line, we'll be on track for those races later on.
Have we missed anything else from Caulfield we should be talking about on Saturday?
No, I think we've covered them all.
As long as one or two of them puts their hand up, it's always tough, you know, it's big racing and we look like we've got a good team on paper, but yes, as long as they perform well on Saturday, we'll be happy.
Well, it's been a pleasure spending the morning out here at your stable complex and walking around some of the best horse flesh that money can buy. You got a couple today at Sandown as well. Have you got a winner for us there? Four tenths and Chuck-a-Luck?
Chuck-a-Luck is a nice each-way bet. He's come over with okay New Zealand form, albeit he's going to be a horse that's going to get out over further. But he'll like the rain-affected ground, so he'll get back and he'll be hitting the line very hard. The fillies, she's jumping up from a midweek maiden to a benchmark 70, so it's always very hard to take that jump up. She'll run well, but I'll probably lean towards the Chuck-a-Luck.
Okay. I'm going to leave you, or hopefully you can leave our listeners, with one good thing of the week. I'm going to start with you, Nat. If you're going to have one bet from the stable, who would it be?
I actually like Sierra Sue at Sale on Friday. Oh, a newcomer, okay. First up.
Oh, I like that. Now, Trent, you've got to redeem yourself. What's your one bet of the week?
Well, I wasn't going to say that because that's just killed the price. But I'll stick with acting. I've made me bed with it once, so I'll go again. She'll bounce back on Saturday.
All right, we will be cheering her home on the weekend, and let's be glam and Tagaloa. Guys, thanks for giving us the access this morning. It's been great to get the insight, and good luck on Saturday.
Thank you, Michael. Cheers.
Trent Busselton and Natalie Young live from their stables. We're going to take a quick break. More to come on Racing Pulse after this. We've got Mickey Floyd, who's come all the way down here to Cranbourne because he only lives around the corner. He'll join me live, and Mickey Guerin as well.
Don't forget, you can tune in every morning from 8:30.